Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston, how are you this evening?
I'm hanging in there.
Oh, I just got tired, but that was because we just watched a Golf Channel segment that kind of put me to sleep.
I mean, at least they have something to talk about, right?
Yeah, but it's dangerous for the game. We'll get into that in just a little bit. First, let's start it off. Local boys, Utah Championship for the Corn Ferry was this week at Oak Ridge Country Club, just north of my current residence.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was, I guess, six players with Utah ties anyway.
Yeah.
That played in the thing, because four actually make the cut. And so the fourth one, I don't know as much about, Austin Christensen. Did he play at BYU as well? I don't think they brought any, they didn't have anything when I tried to pull him up the other day. But yeah, so he had all four former or current Cougs for the six players with Utah. Oh, Danny Summerhays played good too. You left Danny Summerhays off the list.
Oh,
how dare you?
Well, I remembered most, but not all.
So they all had at least Zach Blair and Danny were tied at T30. Peter Quest was T5,
I think. Yeah.
And Patrick Fishburn was T2.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah, with a bogey on 17 that was what I don't know when the last time you played. So 17 is members 8.
Yeah. Isn't that a par 3?
No, it's over a par 4. No, that's so it's a par 4, but it's kind of a shorter dog leg right. It's got some kind of scrub oak to the right, but he missed it right, so he had to kind of punch it through and then hit a chip short. And then didn't make that putt. But then birdies 18 to get it back to 20 under, which was one behind eventual champion Hosen from, let's see where he's, I'm trying to remember where he's from again, although like it just keeps wanting to throw me into the freaking FedEx Cup, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Cozen shoots 21 under, which is right in that sweet spot for the Utah Championship. They're anywhere from 18 to 22, it seems like it ends up there every year in the Utah Championship. But yeah, good week for the Utah boys. Although they all are Cougs, I don't know, whatever. I am not bitter because they have a much better
they have a history of recruiting PGA Tour player caliber players. And I mean, it is what it is.
He was. Which is funny because you didn't hear much about him. He played 2015 to 2017, but I don't remember hearing a ton about him in that. And even like his tournaments weren't that great of finishes. I've just got him pulled up here. It's only got him one top 20, an average, a scoring average of above par, total 73.72. Late bloomer. So all seven players that had Utah ties were Cougs, or at least five ex-Cougs and one and yeah. two current Cougs, which they had a good week, like, say, Fishburne there, Quests with a solid tournament. And it wasn't showing. I'm going to see if it got him into –
He jumped a lot in the Korn Ferry points. So
he did jump a lot. Did it get him into the playoffs?
That's no. what I was. Well, yes.
Yes. Yeah,
he was. But
it didn't,
he
it
was
didn't already... get him into the 25 because it didn't. It didn't update it for
a bit.
For a long bit.
But he was 71st, which said top 75 qualified for the playoffs, and then went
to 46.
Yeah, so he's definitely secured a playoff spot. And that's important because the Korn Ferry playoffs have quite a bit of movement in points, and you can definitely
nab a card. Because that's the reason Zach Blair, when he first got his card, he got it because he finished second in, like, took a third and then a second. In this. So.
And he has only played four tournaments this year. And so he'll need to rack a couple more quality finishes to make it into the top 75. He's sitting at 136 right now.
Yeah, but so who – how many get into the final? Is it just like a normal – because the next one's the playoffs, right? Or is it one more and then the playoffs? I think it's one more.
Yeah.
Because the playoffs start in – so next week they'll all have to have – good finishes. So there's a possibility that, I mean, I think it had him if he would have won. If Fishburne would have won, it actually would have put him up into like that 25th ish area. So there's still a chance. I think Quest was at 125 now. Blair's only played a few tournaments, so he's at 136.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still a chance. They got one more tournament in Nebraska to make some moves and get it done.
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
But yeah, it was a good week. Another former Coug, Dean Wilson, all of a sudden shows up on a Champions Tour leaderboard, ends up T3, just one shot back of the playoff of Jerry Kelly and John Houston, which Jerry Kelly wins. And Jerry Kelly actually didn't play that well. I watched some of that tournament and I was watching. I was like, oh my gosh. But, you know, 9-under. So not like it was, they were blitzing the field a little bit. Tougher course.
Yeah.
It's good to see. You know, I was rooting for him. He got Utah ties.
Well, it's interesting. I can see. I mean, obviously, he had an okay PGA Tour career. He played for quite a bit. He only won one tournament, and I don't know how much status he actually got as a player. But if he keeps playing like this, he'll solidify his place.
Well, he's in for next week with a top 10.
Oh yeah.
So, but I think it was like one. This is his first start all year.
Yeah, so, he almost wins it.
takes advantage of it. But more playoffs on the thing next week. This next week is FedEx Cup playoffs, and you know, with some things going on. But guess who slips into? Who's Mr. 125?
Oh, he's got to be highly marketable and beloved by all.
And sometimes looks like an orange.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's Ricky Fowler.
It's Ricky Fowler.
Good giveaway.
Sometimes it looks like an orange. But I'm like, really, guys? How is Ricky Fowler in top 125? I looked at it. He's made $1 million. Some of that, most of that was probably the CJ Cup where he gets a T3.
Yeah.
Right. He hasn't been playing good. Missing a ton of cuts lately.
I haven't seen a drop off like this in quality of play for a long time. Like even when Spieth was kind of in his slumps, he never got that bad.
But if it, well, he was up there. One that comes to mind a little bit is David Duval. A little bit, but David Duval did have some quality wins before he got to world number one.
And from what I mean, yeah, he won the British Open plus another 10 or more tournaments on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking kind of two different caliber players, but I think he even suffered from vertigo.
Yeah, he suffered from vertigo and so a couple of different things like that. But yeah, I just don't. And if you actually look, which is funny, because if you look on the PGA Tour website under Ricky's profile, it has him 135 in the FedEx Cup points.
Wait, what?
So wait, he's 135, but wait, he's 125. I wonder why. Oh, that's right. They had to remove 10 guys
who played better than.
But because they play in the Live Tour, which, like I said, it's a competing tour. I don't know. We're going to beat a dead horse because we're going to be talking about
it's news.
Some news and they've got the lawsuit going on right now. Like first Live Tour filed.
Do you know why the PGA Tour they're so upset about this? Is because they don't want what happened. Sorry, they don't want what they did
to the PGA of America.
No, to the European Tour.
Oh.
I mean, really think about this. They made bigger purses. They got the marquee players to come over. And you had players like Rory McIlroy, very vocal. I need to play against the best players in the world. And that's here on the PGA Tour. And it became this issue with the European Tour where all the best players would hop over, they'd come back for only the biggest, cherry pick the tournaments at the end. And wait a second. PGA Tour is like, we can't have this happen to us. I know we did it to them, but not to us.
Well, and like, and they did it to the PGA of America before that.
Yeah.
Because so it's like, they're like, wait a second. The PGA Tour of PGA of America is getting way more money than this. And we're the players. Yeah. Coming from Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. We're the players. We're the ones that are creating this. We want our cut. Oh, wait. So we're going to create the PGA Tour and we're going to separate it. Like they were running as coinciding, right? So it's not exactly the same, but it's very similar, right? In what the goal was. It was to make more money for playing golf and not to give out as much of the cut. But yes, you're right. And to the point where like where during a broadcast, Paul Azinger basically said, oh yeah, he's won over there, but that's basically like not winning at all.
he's won some tournaments on the European Tour, but it's a different story.
It's a different story
over here.
Yeah.
It's just
because they all totally suck, basically.
Yeah. And they did that. They pulled all the great players away. And this is why Tiger Woods is like in the top 10 of most won European Tour events because of his British Opens and his paid invites to the Saudi Arabian tournaments and whatnot that he's won over there.
And it's why you get guys like Colin Morikawa, those guys that go over there and are in the top five in the points of the DP World Tour, because they're like, oh, we're going to go to this one. And then, you know, after the PGA Tour basically says you're a crap hole, then they come in and go, hey, we're going to be nice and we're going to co-sanction these events with you.
Yeah. And keep
we're going to be so nice.
Like, it really was a battle between the two tours. Liv was like, hey, Euro Tour, you're a dying breed. Let us come on and infuse your tour with money, make it super exciting, and get more marquee players over here. And for some reason, the Euro Tour commissioner went over to the PGA Tour and was like, hey, this is what they're going to do. But that means I'm going to lose my job and I want to keep my job. So, hey, if you partner with us or become majority owner, then you can kind of do whatever you want with the tour. Just make sure I got my job here.
Yeah.
And it was really weird because it became now this monopoly of the tour and nobody blinked an eye. Nobody is like, wait, the PGA Tour just owns the Euro Tour now? Nobody. And so now another tour pops up and like, whoa. It's lunacy. But I think the thing that bothers me the most is, as we kind of dig into the antitrust stuff and this this lawsuit by these marquee players, the reporting that we're seeing is very one-sided.
Oh, my gosh. We watched that thing, and it was like dangerous.
Dangerous like, actions from
Liv dangerous tour action. Players. What is it? It's going to ruin the game of golf. I'm like, I'm pretty sure okay.
Their timing of this lawsuit was just so precarious that it would happen right before the Fed. Well, Matt Jones won like twice on the tour this year. And he's like, I deserve to freaking play in the playoffs. I'm one of the better players on the PGA Tour. Maybe it wasn't what he did, but he certainly qualified. And he's part of this lawsuit. So it's like, give the man what he earned, right? But again, the Golf Channel, it's just so precarious that they would do this.
And they just don't have a leg to stand on. I'm like, I think you guys are going to be singing a much different tune when actual information starts coming about it, out about what the PGA Tour is doing.
Well,
and they kept saying, well, they've been taking such good care of them. There hasn't been complaints before. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure there's been complaints, but there wasn't anything else. And they say, well, there hasn't been anything else coming. I'm like, no, they squashed because it wasn't the Live Tour, but there was a couple of them before that tried to start up and they didn't do it smart like Live did. They're like, oh, we're going to do this. And they put it out there so that the PGA Tour could just squash it before it even.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the case with a lot of the experimental things that popped up, even to some extent, the World Golf Tour, or World Golf Championships, which I believe were a brainchild of Greg Norman in the first place. And
it was his idea. It was his idea. That's going to suck. And then that's going to suck. And then, oh, wait,
let's do it.
But, and then this is exactly what happens. It's, you know, that great idea that person has that you're like, wait a second. I just told you about that 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But now it's a great idea. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it's pretty unfortunate because the reporting you're getting from the Golf Channel isn't really sharing the story from both sides. I think we have been a little bit pro-Live, but
I like to watch good golf. I like watching Jun Young Ko, Thomas the Tank Engine, which that's kind of a crazy thing. I guess he's got nicknamed Thomas the Tank Engine when he was younger. Which is pretty cool, but I'll watch both. But the thing that drives me nuts is I'm not going to listen to the Golf Channel because it says, especially when you look at the Golf Channel and it says the official network of the PGA Tour. I'm like, it might be a little biased.
It might be. Yes,
yes, lots of bias.
And that's the unfortunate thing. And I think we provide a little bit more unbiased point of view, because for one, we're not associated with any of the tours in any capacity. So we just kind of call it as it is, and hopefully we're given the straightest shot. But the reality is, it's like, it's a monopoly. They don't want a competitor.
Yeah.
And they're doing things, I mean, tons of like slander-ish type of activities, like getting other activist groups involved to undermine it. Like, there's just a list of weird things that have kind of circulated around this that I would necessarily say was a good move by the PGA Tour.
But no, it's like I said, they've done that, and then they go, well, if we're going to do this, now we got to join up with the DP World Tour, and we've got to make sure we squash this so that they can't have those players play over there either.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, okay, that's collusion.
Yeah.
In a sense, we're going to meet with these other leagues to make sure that they go along with what we have so that this other thing can't.
Yeah. And what they did to the European Tour, I mean, they obviously didn't have a leg to stand on anyways. And we knew, and we even commented on it, that look, if you want to make money now, don't even go to the European Tour, go to the Corn Ferry Tour, because you're going to make more money there than you are on the Euro Tour.
And, well, you had a greater chance of advancing to the PGA Tour to make money on the Corn Ferry Tour. Right. And so what have they done? Because you only get five, right? I think from the, was it five or was seven? It
five or 10?
Something. Know. But you still have, but they moved it. They moved the Corn Ferry to 30. And then you have five players that get automatic from the qualifying school, which they took away a little bit ago. So it's like, okay, you're doing all this stuff, right? That you could have done, that you could have had in place, right? You could have said, hey, the TP World Tour, as soon as they signed there and got them, they could have said, hey, your top 10 players, we want to play over here because we want the best players here. And it's a feeder tour, but we're going to support you and you know, we're going to get this so that guys that, right, the AMs are playing over there, they don't have to come over here to the Corn Ferry to then have a better chance. They can still, I don't know. It's just, it is. It's a monopoly. And like I said, and if they really were weren't worried about it, like they say they're not, oh, they're worried about it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're worried about it. And they saw it coming and they've been getting their armor on to prepare for it. And rightfully so, I'd probably do the same thing, you know, if I saw a competitor coming. And, but the biggest thing that I've seen is the people that make the threats are usually the ones that have the most to lose. And that's really been the case because, man, you know, the product starts to get diminished if they don't let players, independent contractors with big names, play in their tournaments. Like,
yeah. Well, and so, it's like I said, it's a big thing and you'd have to see their contracts. But if that's the case, if they can't go, and the one thing that struck me is as odd as they didn't seek the release to play in these tournaments. I'm like, no, they did.
Yeah.
They did seek the release. They were denied. So they did seek
the release. Which is like, it's totally lame because
especially for the first tournament. I can see it because they've said and this is what another thing, they've never granted a release to a competing tour in the States is what was saying, being said going into it. I'm like, okay, so then why didn't you let him play in London? If that's the case, right? Yeah, let him play in London. And then they have the choice to make when they go to Portland. But from what I've heard from some people that have had very close ties with people who played on PGA Tour, people would have to get a release to play in the Utah Open if they had status.
Yeah.
Any status. So and they would be granted that. And they were granted that.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think once stuff starts coming out, I think you're going to find out that they may have not been as forthright with their dealings as their main being led on or making known. But like I said, we'll see. It'll play out in the wash, right? Right now, the PGA Tour has a better feel on a,
they do.
Basically a week-by-week basis. This week may have been that, but I know. It's just crazy.
Yeah, we're gonna see how it plays out.
we are gonna see how it plays out. On PGA Tour, CBS News, Nick Faldo retires.
Yeah,
19 years in the booth total, and 16 years with CBS. Sometimes, yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel? Did you get teary eyed?
No. Everybody else did, but I wasn't. I don't know that he was great. He wasn't like super controversial. Like
he was very milquetoast.
Yes. He was very safe. Right. Which is probably why he was there for 16 years. He was very safe.
Okay. I thought the biggest thing that he offered was an accent. And that was just to kind of switch up the color of the telecast.
Yeah, and like I said, it he didn't bring like, I don't know. Like I said, he was fine. He told you what you were seeing. Like you said, he didn't elaborate much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He didn't expand.
He was good. I mean, he added some insight and whatnot, but not to the extent that you think a guy like his resume would. Like, I remember people like Peter Costas providing a little bit more input, insight into things and doing his homework. And it was really just kind of cruise control for Faldo. And I kind of expected more out of him because the guy's a multiple Masters winner, multiple British Open winner, one of the more decorated Euro Tour players. And he just... Yeah,
he had knowledge. He didn't share as much as he probably could have.
I felt that way.
So,
well, who's going to?
Speaking of overseas, I don't know. Who knows? Well, not David Faraday.
That's true.
But yeah, let's get over some Lynx golf. Ashley Buhai, South African, wins the AIG Women's Championship at Muirfield, which was kind of a big deal because I think it was just until a couple years ago they didn't even allow women members at Muirfield. So, like, and that I don't care. We actually had this discussion. I was playing at a club with some buddies, and we were talking about a couple of different courses, and Butler National came up. Oh, because he was playing, he had played, Martis Camp earlier in the week, and then we were out playing, but we were talking about different things and toughness and rough, and then I was like, well, did you see it? Because I don't know if you saw it was on Instagram where somebody was dropping a ball into the Butler National, into the rough at Butler National, and it just completely disappeared.
That wasn't rough. That was cabbage.
That was nasty. But I was telling him about us because we were up doing at a club up there with Impact. We were doing some shaft fittings, and there was a bunch of guys that were members at Butler National. So I had some time to talk to them, right? Just like, is it as tough as they say? And they're like, oh yeah, it's the effing toughest place you'll ever play ever. And then we got to talking, and because it was, you know, they've asked them, you know, they've been wanting to hold championships there because of it. Yeah. But they won't because it's a gentleman's only club. Ooh. And from words of their members, it ain't changing.
Nope.
It is not changing, right? And it's like most of these guys that have a thing at Butler National, right? It's where they go to play with the boys, right? They probably have at least two or three others. Probably they've got another one within the vicinity of Chicago, which is where it's at in the Chicago area, I believe. Right? Isn't that where Butler National is?
Yeah.
In that area. So they got one in there, but they're literally like, this is when I want to go play golf with the boys and, you know, sit in the locker room, play poker. You know, it's guys night, right? And
yeah,
it's not changing to host any event.
There was a course in California, and this is a while ago, so I don't even know what their membership fees are now, but it was like, it was Mayakama. You ever heard of Mayakama? It's just outside of Napa and Santa Rosa. It's a pretty prestigious little private club there. At the time, membership fees were $250,000. And if you wanted your wife to join, it was another $150,000. That was like 10 years ago. But that's right. How they solved the gender problem there. Like, no, we allow them. It just costs $150,000 to bring your wife.
Bring your wife. Yeah. And like I said, whatever, you know, that, like, if they wanted to start one, start a women's only club.
Yeah.
Right.
Do
it. The thing about it is, it's there. It's available for them to do. But they won't. Because there's not the demand for it,
right? That's always been the case.
And it's like there's plenty of clubs, right?
Yeah,
a couple of them don't have. It's I have no right. Let them allow them. Don't have them allow them. Whatever. I've really no say either way. But yeah, I don't think Butler National's changing for a while.
Yeah.
But it's Buhai's first LPGA tour win. She's got some ladies European tour wins. And she wins it in a four hole playoff, with Inji Chun. Hits a great bunker shot to make a par, and Inji bogeys. But I will say, I just liked watching it. Lynx golf is fun golf. Lynx golf is.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking about this, and I was like, if there was one major that would like suit my game, me personally, would be the Open Championship, right? Wider fairways, mm-hmm. Right? So I don't know. I just like Lynx golf, so it's fun.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I miss Lynx golf because I like to play it. In fact, Thursday, I'm going to be playing a very Lynx-y style golf course out at Soldier Hollow. So that's kind of fun.
You're playing the silver or the gold?
Silver.
That's it's the more, Lynx-y it's, one. It's more Lynx-y. It is definitely
not
more
Lynx-y. The yeah. Not the golds. So I'm excited about that. I love that
golf course. Are you just playing for fun? Or
It's like a corporate scramble.
A corporate scramble. Hit and giggle.
Yeah. Hit and giggle. Par fives and two.
Yeah.
Par fours and one. Let's go.
Yeah. There's six of them on that course, so you get a lot of chances for the par fives and two for sure.
I honestly, I haven't played all the courses in Utah, but I've actually played at least 65 to 70% of them now.
Yes.
And it's Soldier Hollow Silver Course still ranks very high on my list, easily in the top 10.
Like I said, the gold gets the hype, but I like the playability and just the, like I said, it's, people are like, oh, it's not very different. I'm like, no, it does it with just subtle elevation changes and stuff.
Yeah, it's still, to me, like the par fives are challenging. Mm-hmm. The par threes are beastie.
Yeah,
par threes are beastie. And the par fours are the ones that you can get, but they just make it a little bit tricky off the tee sometimes. Maybe a blind tee shot here or water in play there.
Yeah.
But to me, Yeah, I dare I say it's in my top five, the Silver Course in Utah. So, great course, but
nice. Yeah, it probably wouldn't make my top five, but it's a solid course. It's my preference of the two.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
But here on the Birdies and Bogies podcast, we are going to be all inclusive, and we are going to add a women's What's in the Bag.
Hey,
because I was watching it, and so when they kept playing the 18th hole over and over, they were hitting drivers, and then they had Buhai kept on having a fairway wood, right? And she kept having a fairway wood, and I was like, well, when she pulled that one out, and I still think it's got it wrong, because I think it says it's the Srixon with the Ventus blue shaft, but I could have swore it had a stealth, but their head covers, Srixon's and the stealth head cover are very similar, but I think so it probably was the Srixon. But I say, she got a pretty mixed bag up at the top, at least. And it does seem to be that way, it seems to be that way when you've got a Srixon staffer.
Yeah.
They don't tend to play the driver. So she goes at highway epic speed.
Yeah.
You know, which is following in the suit of Live Tour winner Henrik Stenson of last week with the Epic Max. He had the Epic Max LS, but she has the Epic Speed with the Ventus Blue 5R. Mm-hmm. And then she goes with the Ping 4 G425 and the 3-wood with just their stock Alta CB shaft. And then the Srixon fairway 5-wood.
Yeah,
the Ventus blue shaft. So she mixed it up right in the middle there a little bit. And then she goes just the standard, the Srixon ZH with looks like a stock shaft in it. And then the Srixon ZX5s for her irons. And then the RTX Zip Core in her 50, 54, and then a 60. And with the Nippon Pro 850 GH shafts. And then she goes like off the Srixon, which I don't know why anyone would play a Srixon, Cleveland Srixon putter, because they're not good. They do make them.
I know Cleveland does. I didn't know if Srixon put their name on one.
No, they're just Cleveland. Yeah. But they look like Kmart specials. I mean, to be honest.
It's so hard to make a cast putter look quality. You have to put just as much work into beautifying a cast putter as it takes to actually just make a quality milled putter.
And they're looking for that price point is what they're doing with the cast, is exactly why they're doing it. Then she goes to the Odyssey Tri-Hot 5K1. And then the Srixon Z-Star ball. So, the biggest thing ball. Was I was just noticing at the top of the bag there was a lot of difference in the bag, which is weird that you would, usually match that up. But we've seen that a few times where they have had different shafts and different manufacturers in a player's bag for fairway woods.
Yeah.
But yeah, inclusive. I realized I was interested to see because I knew that she wasn't playing right a Cleveland putter, which is gonna happen, and that she wasn't playing the driver or what I thought was the fairway woods, but it makes sense that she was playing at least one of them.
And I think it's worth noting regular shaft and the driver, 10-5. They're just trying to get everything they can out of it. I think typically the average drive on the LPGA Tour is around 250 after roll. So
she was just trying to get, like I said, with that, you're just trying to get a little bit of height, not a ton of spin with the blue, but a little bit more with the R-Flex. But my guess is that's what the rest of them are R-Flexes too. doesn't say, but the 850 is the Nippon NS Pro. It's a lighter weight, kicks the ball up in the air. So, yeah. So there we go with that. Now the PGA Tour, which, right, it was the Wyndham Championship, which is funny because it gets put at the back end of the thing, but they're a major sponsor. I think there's a Wyndham Rewards. Because didn't we were looking at something. What was it? The Scotty Scheffler one. He won the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. I swear they did something like this for the Wyndham Rewards last year. So Wyndham is a pretty big sponsor of the turn of the PGA Tour overall, and it gets stuffed right before the playoffs, which you know is just not going to get a ton of quality players in the field. But 20-year-old Ju Young Kim, which is, I think it said he's the seventh youngest player to ever win a PGA Tour event, but he just blitzed the final round, well, at least the front nine of the final round. He shoots 61, but he shoots 27 on the front side. Just comes out blazing.
Yeah.
But the craziest thing about this is, and I don't know if anyone's ever done it, there's probably stats that show it, but he started his tournament, very first hole, par four, with an eight. And watching it, it wasn't like, it was a very sloppy, just from how they showed the shots, it was a very sloppy eight.
Yeah.
And it was like to the left. He chipped out to the fairway, but then hit it over. And then it looked like he shanked. It probably hit and rolled down there, but it looked like he shanked a chip. Oof. Then left a short chip short. And then another chip pretty short. And then passed it. And it was not pretty, to say the least. But he comes back from that. Wins the tournament. Going away, really. I think he won by five is what he ended up winning by. Just fought around 61. Let's just kind of go through his bag. Like I say, young kid, so he's going to have just the new, because nothing he could have is going to be super old in his bag. But he's got the new TSR models in his tide list. Or in his driver and 3-wood. Well, it's getting late, getting tired, starting to talk over myself, slur my speech. But the TSR 3, 9 degrees, set at standard with the Fujikura Atmos Black 6X, which they must just have these on the tour truck now because they are no longer producing the Atmos.
No.
And if you want to get one, you're going to have to buy one off of...
It's a pretty stout website. Shaft. Yeah. I remember the Atmos as being super boardy.
It is boardy. It doesn't have really, it's boardy for sure. So he must just be trying to flatten it out. Must spin it a little bit with the driver. Then he goes with the TSR 3, 13.5 degree. So he goes low loft. In almost into a 2-wood with the 13.5 set at A1, and then the Mitsubishi Tensei 1K Series Pro White 70TX. So again, my guess is he just floats it a little bit and trying to keep that down.
Well, that's an interesting transition, right? Typically you're going to see these monikers for stiff flex kind of be consistent throughout your woods, but he goes X on the driver, but then TX
on the 3-wood.
And this is really what I've noticed is, as I used to be a big Mitsubishi fan, I played the original whiteboard for a very long time, but as they subsequently released more and more issued product under that name, it didn't react the same. And I was like, well, I think I need the TX because this just feels too soft. And it just feels like, and that to me, this is kind of proof to it. as the shafts started to get produced more to current day, now there's the actual tour stiff, which is what the old X used to be.
Right.
So I think that's kind of funny to see that progression.
Yeah. And then in his irons, he goes to two and three T200s, which are basically, it was, they used to do the U500 and the U510, which was just a bigger model. Now they do the U500 and then they just go the T200, two and three iron.
They look good. They do.
But he does that, but he goes with the Ventus Black HB10X in the two iron. So he just wants just an absolute bullet out of his two iron. And then the three iron, he goes into a Project X55. So he wants that thing to be able to kick up just a little bit, just a little softer, probably tipped a little bit, but, and so he wants to keep the weight down just a smidge too. With it, but he probably wants it to kick up just a little bit more, right? Where he still wants that distance, because it's, you know, the T200 is still a rocket launcher. So he wants that, and then he goes into the T100s four through pitching wedge with the Project X 6.0, right? So then he's going for a little bit more weight in the four through pitching wedge to bring that flight probably down just a little bit. He wants a little bit more penetrating with those.
Yeah. And that's this is a good lesson for all us golfers out there. Here we have an elite golfer, and he essentially has game improvement irons and the long irons and players improvement. I don't even know what they're classified as, because they're just not blades. And they're not forged cavity backs.
They're player cavities is what
they're player. I just call them player improvement, right? Because they're game improvement play. But anyways,
they're player cavities.
multi-material player cavities. Yeah. And you know, if you're out there struggling to break 80, but you've got this affection for blades in the bag,
T100.
Take a note.
Yeah, T100 may be a good way to go.
Yeah,
that, I mean, that's actually. The Apex
TCB
is a pretty good one.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of
effect. There is a lot of that player cavities, right? Player muscle backs.
Multi-materialed.
Yeah.
And so, keep those options open. Don't just focus on the blades that JT plays, and that's therefore what you must play. So,
yeah. And then we go into the wedges, which I sent you a thing. I was so sad. But the tee has been knocked from the throne for a week.
It'll
be back. But he's got the Wedgeworks 60A grind in the bag, which is, and this is something else too that people should take note. So now he goes, which is, it's weird. They used to go to the S, but he goes to Dynamic Gold Tour Issue X100s, right? So now he's trying for a stiffer shaft, but it's a little lighter than the S4s as far as total weight. He's obviously trying to do something with that, but he goes away from, right? He doesn't put Project X's in his wedges, which a lot of people try to match those up, right? A little bit, but he's got, through his bag, he's got two Fujikura shafts, but one Atmos. So he basically has five. Is that?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, five or six different shafts, because he's got an Atmos, and then he goes to the Tensei, and then he goes to the Ventus Black, and then he goes to a Project X 5.5, and then a Project X 6.0, and then X100s. And then he does add a seventh shaft in his bag.
Yeah.
But give the listeners a little bit, and I think we've talked about it before, but the A-grind, since you are the knowledge king when it comes to Vokey wedge grinds.
So the A-grind is a little bit of a deception. It's actually an L-grind with the transition grinds on the bottom that are smoothed off. And when you do that, You still maintain bounce, but it just gives a more cambered sole to it, more rounded sole from front to back. And it just kind of lets it sit a little bit lower and gives you a nice smooth line to it. So it's a good grind. I think for him, I mean, there's two things that I thought were really interesting. One, he stamps radar on his wedges, like Justin Thomas does. So that was pretty unique. And then the second thing is, I mean, every shaft we've seen in the bag has been clearly to reduce spin. Like if you're a high spin player, Project X is a great shaft to take some of that spin off.
Because they use their 40.
Yeah. And that's why I think he went into the X100s on the wedges, is maybe he got too much spin out of the S4s. And so he gets something a little bit boardier, and this helps him flight it still, keeps the weight down, and takes off some of that spin. Because if you're a high spin player on the irons, you are like a Velcro ripping spin on your wedges, like no doubt. And so it's pretty cool to see people like this guy experiment with different kinds of shafts in the wedges to reduce spin.
So yeah, that, and then I go into his putter. It's a really clean looking Scotty Cameron Tour Type
GSS. With a black
sight dot and sight line. So he goes the sight line and sight dot, and then he goes with the kind of the Tiffany-ish blue feel everywhere else. I just wanted to see.
I learned something about this particular putter. So yeah, this one is GSS. It's a different material in some way or the other that Scotty knows and we don't, but the particular design on this Tour Type, from appearance, it looks like it is just another Newport 2. You almost feel like you could take that same putter off the rack and it would look identical. But from what I've heard, the Tour Types actually have a slimmer profile. So the Tour players saw the Special Select and they thought the Newport 2 was a little bit thick. And from what I've heard, this is a slightly thinner model. So a
thinner model from
front to back.
Front to back.
So it's a,
from face to the face back end.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You want to see something just a little slimmer.
Yeah, putters have gotten heavier over the years. 20 years ago, the standard weight was anywhere between 300 and 330. And now putters are in the 350 to 360 range, and you got to add it somewhere. And so I wonder where these Tour players are sitting on total putter weight if you're getting a thinner blade. So
yeah, it'd be interesting to see what their total weight was.
They're going light.
And the seventh shaft that he added was LA Golf TPZ one black. Which is when we were doing some research on it, it's 136 gram shaft.
Yeah. So. And this is pretty cool because as you're building and balancing clubs, and I learned this, if you put 135 gram shaft into a putter, you're actually adding weight to the putter head based on its balance point, because the shaft itself is heavier and you can get a nice feel out of it. So if you are feeling like your putter head's a little light, you could look at getting into a little bit heavier putter shaft and get some good balance out of it.
I think you need to call up. I guarantee you, if you called up and told them that you wanted to put some of their shafts in your thing, they would send you one.
Yeah, they'd send me at like cost. I think cost on those is like $350.
No, cost isn't that much. It's not going to be that much. But they may send you one.
Maybe.
I know that they're pretty. I don't know exactly how they are now, though. Yeah. They wanted to get them in people's hands, but now that they've got Bryson is a part owner, and I think that's probably what they did with DJ too, because now DJ has it.
Yeah.
And that's how they're settling that. They're giving him
butter shafts.
Driver shafts, but then they're giving him a little teeny percentage of the company.
Yeah.
I think with some of these guys. But it would be interesting just to try them and see what they, how they feel.
Yeah. I think it's a good shaft. I mean, a lot of people are playing them, so it would be pretty awesome to give something like that a shot. I think there might be a little contention with their newest and greatest putter release. So, we'll see.
Yeah, like golf shafts newest.
Did you not know about their putter?
They did one. Didn't they do one for...
Dude, you got to look this thing up. You got to look this thing up.
Send it to me all. Because they did one, right? Because the one that DeChambeau has now is made for him by LA Golf, right?
I don't know. Maybe LA Golf partnered with that one putter company, but I thought Cobra got involved. Yeah, but this putter, it's printed carbon, so it's super light. And it doesn't have any customization in regards to like lie angle or anything. It's got a neck on there that's just plugs right in. It's basically a carbon version of the old Nicklaus Response putter, the McGregor Response. So they wanted a huge sweet spot, so they had to make a huge putter.
Let's see this one. Let's see. The LA Golf putter. I'm looking it up right now.
Dude, sight to behold.
Sight to behold. That would be true. So did they print it to look like Damascus?
It's layered carbon. So layered, I guess. Carbon.
Yeah. It doesn't. Oh, they've got a mallet too.
Yeah. It's all you. And look at that. It comes at a very reasonable price of $1,500. Sign me up.
Oh, that is nuts. Why isn't it showing the plumber's neck on there? Because they give you a plumber's neck option in the mallet. A plumber's neck, slant neck, or slant neck face balanced. But yeah,
I won't show up.
And then it just comes in the, so it in their picture, it doesn't look huge.
No, but
it's huge. It's
huge.
It's huge.
I mean, look at the shaft. You know that's a wide shaft.
Oh yeah, because that's the DeChambeau putter is a wide shaft.
Yeah. And so right.
It's a really big shaft.
If that shaft looks normal to this putter.
Yeah, then it's gonna be a big one.
Yeah.
So you've got the Nicklaus putter was enormous. I think he won a Masters with that thing.
I know. That thing had so many sales. The power of tour players. But You know, talking shafts, there actually was a really cool release this week.
There was.
From Fujikura. Ventus has just been dominating the tours.
Yes.
And even Tiger switched. Most of the marquee players are playing Ventus one way or the other. And they just had a win this week on the ladies tour, as well as shaft in play in the irons on the men's tour. So, yeah. I mean, Ventus is there, and it's pretty amazing. And so to expand upon the line, and this is pretty cool because typically you see a shaft company offer three of one offering. So whatever category or product line it is. So Ventus, as we knew, was always red, blue, and black.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the low kick, mid kick, high kick kind of scenario. And a lot of other shaft companies have kind of followed that color coordination. I think Diamana kind of pioneered it with their blue and their red and their white.
Then you had the Matrix would do their when they had their black and their red and stuff like that.
So I mean, it makes it easy for us as consumers, but Fujikura Aventus released the TR kind of as a test. Mm-hmm. They had the TR, which was kind of the black blue, or and it was in between the black. And you were you have that in your ping.
I have it. So this is the ability to put it in my ping. Yes.
Yeah. So, but anyways, that middle ground is really where they fit. So if you look at the spectrum of available shafts, there's the red and the blue, and now they have a red TR, which kind of is this purple shaft. It sits in between the red and the blue. And then they do that with the blue shaft. The TR blue sits in between the black and the blue. And now they have the new black TR, which sits between black and blacker. And now it's just
the black hole is what we should call that one, because what we said, the blue and the red, it should have been the purple.
The Ventus purple. It really should. It would have been so good.
And you had if you had the blue and the black, it'd just be midnight blue.
Midnight. Yeah.
Yeah. Midnight. Yeah. And then you just got the black hole.
The black hole. And ultimately design was they added some additional torsion fibers in part of the shaft that just made it a little stiffer for those middle categories.
It's probably what they same thing. I think they stiffen up the butt end of it. Yeah. So it plays a little firmer is what they've done to them. So now the Ventus black is going to be a shaft that I will never, ever be able to hit, ever.
It's a beast. In fact, I mean, the regular Ventus Black X worked pretty good for me, but I've got the TX6 in my stealth, and that thing is just lasers.
Yeah. So, it's going to be pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. Like I said, I think for a fairway wood shaft, the red TR might be a good one for me to.
The flat out blue. Just depends if you want to. I think the blue TR is probably a pretty good transitional shaft for fairways for me, as it would. It'd probably play really similar to my Oban Kyoshi Tour Limited, blues.
Yeah, somewhere in that range. That's all the news. I mean, there's going to be news. We got the playoff coming up this week for the FedEx St. Jude, which, like I said, we probably should look at it and see who's actually playing. Because I don't think it's a ton of, I mean, you usually get about 5 to 7 guys that aren't playing. We're going to see if our man Finau can, let's see, FedEx Cup. Why don't they just... So Scheffler's so the top five, actually the top 10. I wonder if a memo came out, because so far every single player in the top 125 is playing this week. Every single player, every single one is playing this week. I think a confidential memo came out and said, guys, you can't miss the first week this year.
And that was like a textbook move by the players in the top 30. They're like, yeah, 4 weeks in a row is a little rough. We're going to play the last three. We'll skip the first one because it doesn't matter. Yeah. We're going to go to the next one.
They only do three. They only do three anyway.
Right? Was it three?
It might be. Who knows?
I thought it was four, but
maybe it's four because they go 125. No, then they go 70 and then 30. Yeah, so you got the FedEx, St. Jude, BMW, and then the Tour Championship. But they didn't play that first week because they're like, we don't need this to get to the next stage, and we're not going to lose our spot because the four guys behind me aren't playing either. So exactly, it's not a big deal. And or, you know, you may have had some of them skip out or not or play, and but you had at least five or six of the top 10 not playing the first one because they didn't want to go to Memphis in August and just be swampy all week. So yeah, I wonder if it kind of came out and they're like, hey guys, we've got a we got this situation going on right now. We really need you to play this week.
I'd say that's a fair, because one, you know, if this particular tournament, the FedEx St. Jude, FedEx is a major sponsor for the FedEx Cup playoff, mm-hmm, and it's the first event, and so it's like, you guys are in.
Yeah, you have to play. You got to play for us.
Yeah, and
it might be the last 3 weeks that some of these guys play.
Yeah.
For the PGA Tour for a while.
Yeah, that's the catch, right? Who's going to jump ship?
Who's going to jump? Yeah. Who's going after? It will be interesting.
Yeah. So.
But three more weeks, I'm hoping some people jump because it gives us content to talk about. And it'll really, right, at some point, they're going to have to, rather than bashing it and saying what a crappy, it's just a flash in the pan. If the right five guys go, they're going to have to. Yeah. And I still don't think it ruins the game, but I just think it will force the PGA Tour to adjust their position and maybe take a look at, and maybe actually talk to Norman. Cause Norman said he's always and he's been aggressive in some things, but he's always said, hey, I'm willing to talk to the PGA Tour.
We're not
stepping on their major, their flagship events and their majors.
That it's true. I mean, the proof is in your actions, right? And for him to schedule these during the like weakest PGA tournaments on the calendar and not schedule it over major ones, like that's a bold move of like an olive branch, to be honest. So
we'll see where it plays out. Yeah. To be continued. It's not, like I said, I don't think it's going away, at least for the next year or so. A couple years. It's going to run its course for a couple of years, and then that'll be really where you decide, right? They're going to get a few things ironed out that they need to get ironed out. But yeah, I'm just excited to watch more golf. And they can learn from each other and how they produce content, how they run tournaments. There's stuff to be learned. We shall see. But other than that, I think that's it.
Yes, sir.
Everybody, thanks for listening. And until next time, we're out. Thanks for listening to this episode of Birdies and Bogeys. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review, and until next time, have a great week.